The best B2B SaaS companies in the world have made the shift towards a demand generation strategy focused on revenue. And Europe is falling behind. What about you? Isn't it about time you made the shift? On this podcast, we interview leaders at the forefront of modern demand generation to help you make the shift and join the movement. We need to drop the MQLs and focus on what matters, leading you into the future. This is the Demand Generation Movement, and this is your host, Adam Holmgren.
Okay, welcome to the Demand Generation Movement, and this time it's my pleasure to welcome Paula Molinar, Senior Manager Demand Generation at Paddle. Great to have you, Paula.
Thanks. Hi, Adam. It's great to be here, and thank you so much for the invite.
Yeah, I'm just happy you have the time to be here now, because you obviously there are very exciting days for you over at Paddle. You have just raised your Series D. Can you tell us a little bit about Paddle and what you do?
So Paddle is what we call a complete payment solution for SaaS business. What I mean by complete is we have everything that a software business needs to be able to sell that software. So that comes from the checkout, the payment processing, the subscription management, all the way to tax compliance. So essentially, we replace everything, all the tooling that you need to sell SaaS globally. Mm-hmm. That's Paddle in a nutshell.
And I think you know, when you started at Paddle in, I think it was 2019, if I've done my research correctly, you were at Series B, around 90 people, and then you have been at the company now until raising a Series D. So it's, I feel like this is the kind of journey many marketers are on right now, entering in maybe Series A or Series B. So it would be fun to, you know, hear you talk a little bit about how marketing have evolved at Paddle, how it was when you started, and then what are some of the key success factors from a marketing point of view that you feel like you have been really successful at?
Yeah, so to start with, it's crazy that it's been just 3 years, because it feels like much more. We're a very fast-paced team here, so I think that's why it feels like that. But it's good because we still have that attitude, even though we moved from Series B to Series D, we grew that much. When I first joined the team, I was really in charge of anything that's digital, that's paid media. And I think one of the bigger differences, of course, is budget and the size and scale of the programs. It used to be much smaller to what we do right now. But because it's always been an environment that we were really free to test, to learn, to try anything different, to really evolve. I mean, just segue a little bit. We hear a lot about work for a company where the CEO believes in marketing, and it's unfortunately has been exactly like that with Paddle. So even though the scale of the programs were much smaller, we had a lot of buy-in from the exec team as well. And yeah, on as a Series B, the focus was really on capturing demand. So a lot of the programs that we did was very, very heavily on everything outreach based or quotation marks, growth tactics. So short term tactics that really open conversations and convert a lot of people into the website. And with time, of course, our goals have changed, our targets have changed, aka increased a lot, became much more ambitious. And just capturing demand was no longer enough. So we needed to start investing, creating demand as well. And I mean, in the past 1 or 2 years, I think that's the biggest shift in investing more on awareness and education as well as the capturing demand. And it's not something that's ever going to be done and dusted. I think that's essentially my job, is all about capturing the immediate demand, but also trying to look at the long-term demand that's coming for the next few quarters and so on. And you ask about the key success factors. I mean, in my very humble opinion, I think something that's really, really big is the evolution of how we talk about Paddle. And we moved away from a very jargony way of speaking about our product and ourselves to a more personal, more insightful messaging. And by all means, I'm not saying it's perfect now, but that it has improved so much. And there's there's a lot of work to do, but I think that it's again something that will keep evolving anyway. Yeah, essentially it's all about understanding the audience and the marketing, and the audience and the market is evolving all the time, so we need to keep evolving as well.
I like that, and I like that you also talk about capturing and creating demand. I feel like when many people talk about demand, and it's usually like the creation part people talk about, but often the case is there is already some existing demand that we could actually capture and grow from. So I feel I think it's important to also have that, right? How much would you say now that you are like spending your time or resources on like the creation part versus the capturing part? Have you like turned over more now towards, we want to build brand awareness, or are you still also, you know, continuing to capture what's already existing? Before we continue this episode, I want to tell you about one of today's sponsors, HockeyStack. HockeyStack is a marketing solution that lets you collect and connect your marketing, product, revenue, and sales data to really understand what drives revenue. And from that, you can easily answer important business-related questions such as, what sales playbooks are bringing in the most customers? What is our demo win rate and ACV from paid ad campaigns? And how much expansion revenue is driven by the customer success team? And you do this by simply adding one line of code to your website and product. It couldn't be more simple to start understanding your data and revenue already tomorrow. So check them out at hockeystat.com. And now back to the episode.
We'll always capture what's existing. I think one of our biggest channels still, like for example, Google Ads and things like that. That's all about capturing demand. So I think probably, I almost want to say 50-50.
Yeah.
It changes a lot throughout the quarter as well, because we need to be looking at our targets constantly. I mean, I work on revenue and ops created. So if we're saying that we're lacking on what we should be at, then I'll switch more towards the capturing the demand. If we're getting a lot of people in the door, I can afford to spend a little bit more on brand awareness, for example. So I think it's almost a 50-50, but it depends a lot where we are at that point in target wise.
Yeah, and I guess like both are very correlated as well, right? If we do the brand awareness part well, we will obviously have more to capture eventually. So yeah, I like that.
Exactly. Yeah. You need to think about short term and long term.
And if you would like describe the entire marketing team, people usually like organizational charts and so on. Like, where do the demand gen functions sit, and in correlation to the rest of the marketing team, and how you work with them?
Yeah, so I've been in the marketing team when we were just 3 people, and now we're 20 plus. So a lot has changed. But essentially, we have the demand gen team, which also includes the BDR team, both in US and UK. And then we have the content team, we have the product marketing team, and also the brand and creative team, which also just delivered our rebrand, which was a huge job. And I think they've done a great job there. So we have all of these teams within the marketing team. And just going back to the last question about the change between Series B and Series D, because we grew so much in the marketing team, alignment is just so important. And I mean, everything that I'm doing, I need to make sure that the brand team is aware, that the content team is aware, the creative as well, the product marketing team is aware. So we're very much speaking the same language. That's essentially how we're divided.
Yeah, no, I want us to continue down that route, because you talked about BDRs, right? I feel like that's an interesting, I see a lot of talk around, you know, where the BDRs should sit and so on. And I have never tested a model where they sit in the marketing team. So can you tell us a little bit more about that? Like, the what kind of insights are you getting from that, and how does it help, like, yeah, sales and marketing collaboration?
So the BDR team used to be on the sales team before, and recently has moved to marketing. Mm-hmm. I always had a very good relationship with the BDR manager, the head of BDR, and I don't think much has changed in that side, because we shared the same targets. We were always constantly talking to each other. I think that I have a very good relationship with the BDR as well. But I think that something that's very positive is most of the time, marketing teams don't do a great job at highlighting the things that we're doing and all of the assets that we're creating and all of that. And I think that having BDRs in the marketing team just enables them to have more visibility on everything that we are creating. But as I said, we just have done this move. So I think that's the biggest insight that I had so far.
Yeah, but I think that's really cool. I agree with you. I think that's, we rarely share what we're doing. We are doing so many things, and I would guess they would be very interested in seeing what we are, you know, releasing, seeing it align hopefully with the sales process and their sales pitch and all of those. I can only imagine that that actually becomes a bit easier if they are in the same team, because then it's, yeah, no boundaries in that sense.
Yeah, 100%.
And a while ago, I actually read a post from you where you talked about, you know, many people talk about this. How did you hear about this field that a lot of people are implementing, and we have as well over at GetAccept? Can you share some of your learning from that, if you have learned anything, and like, what did you expect before that the results to be, and yeah, if it's the same?
Just start with, I love that so much. It's this like channel that I'm always looking at. There's been a lot of learnings, and I think that what I expected less people to be honest. There's a lot of people who just type whatever on their keyboard and just put that. But a lot, I think 90% of the people are actually being quite honest about where they heard from us. And I think the first learning is something that's obvious for a lot of us in marketing, which is search and content and SEO. All of that investment is super important. And I mean, one example is there's a lot of people coming from something, a content that they read about sales tax, for example. And sales tax is not the most fun topic at all, but it's important and it's a huge pain for people everywhere. And these people are looking for clarity, they're looking for advice, and they're not getting that much online. And we've built a great library of content around that. So a lot of people are seeing our content, are learning more about that, think that we are good leaders because we understand a lot about that subject. And yeah, all of that is helping us to create demand because they trust us.
Yeah.
So that was one, a very fundamental thing for marketing, but it's just good to see happening. A lot of people are coming from word of mouth and referrals, which is everything related to dark funnels, really. So there isn't that much that we can do, but it just highlights the importance of community building, for example. Another one is people, because we do checkouts for our clients, they can see us out there. So a lot of people are seeing our product being used by our clients. They are liking what they see and they're asking to speak to sales, which is a great testament to the product itself. And then I think the most recent one, of course, is the funding news that caused a lot of buzz. A lot of people came because of that. And the most interesting one is our CEO actually did an interview on Sky News. And a lot of people come in and requesting a demo and saying that they saw us on TV.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's quite cool. And I'm like, oh, I'm a digital person by nature. Do I need to invest on TV now? But yeah, I mean, there's lots of learnings. I'm curious to hear about yours as well.
Yeah, I guess your brand might be the next one we see on Super Bowl then, since you have seen some.
I need a budget for that.
But yeah, we have similar learnings. I think we have our, you know, regular sources that always show up in the top, which are like Google Ads or organic search and so on, which is great because we need to continue doing that. But then we have a lot of those where we actually can see that, you know, it's attributed to paid search, but when their perspective on like how they found us or how they heard about us, that is more the paid social. So, and I think that's interesting because we attributed them to like directly to our paid search, but obviously they in their mind found us in more of an awareness channel, which I think is great because we put a lot of effort into that, but it's hard to like put a dollar to it.
So I'm curious, when you say paid social, do they say that they came from like LinkedIn or Facebook or something like
that? And sometimes they are very specific, like especially people. I love when people are like, yeah, I saw an ad on LinkedIn, for example. That's great, please tell me which one. That's like, and then sometimes we have these where we can't do really do anything, people that say they found us on the internet, which is also like, yeah, that's great, but I can't really do anything with this.
Yeah, a lot of people, we have a lot of people coming from Facebook and LinkedIn as well. But we have someone in the marketing team who's focused on social media and community. So I think the struggle that I have sometimes is Facebook and LinkedIn is all coming, and it's a joint effort from both paid media and probably organic as well. But yeah, she's doing a great job there. So there's no point of really saying if it's paid or not.
No, exactly. And I feel like that's one of the discussions we are having a lot lately, is how we can like collaborate more from the organic side and also the paid side when we talk about social. Is that something you are, you know, doing a lot, or how does that work?
Yeah, I think we have improved a lot in the last few months. Now we run meetings every 2 weeks where we just look at all of the ads that we want to create on paid social. Mm. And we have the social media person there as well. And she uses a lot of that on social posts as well. We're trying to be a little bit more fun in our approach. So she can definitely use that on social media. So, and I also like to take her take as well, because she's on social media every day, all day long, pretty much. So she hears a lot about what people are thinking or seeing, or liking. So yeah, I think that we have improved a lot the relationship there, and it's important to be very much aligned on how we speak, all of that. So it doesn't look like an ad all the time, and it looks like more organically.
Before we continue this episode, I want to tell you about one of today's sponsors, Albacross. I first started using Albacross a few years ago to identify unseen website visitors and personalize the messaging on the web. But only within a few years, they've developed to be a key player when it comes to buyer intent data. So you get account level insights into every interaction with a potential buyer from Albacross, from awareness all the way down to retention. And it means that Albacross makes it easier to answer all of these key demand questions that we have. Which accounts are ready to buy and should be sent to sales? Which ad campaign are driving the most ICP buyers? And what is my ideal customer account interested in, and how can I better reach them? So if you are trying to figure out these problems, check them out at albacross.com and they'll help you out. And now, back to the episode. Yeah, and I feel like we can often learn a lot from the organic social media part, because they are often very, you know, fun and creative and outgoing. Yeah. And maybe we are a bit more static and strict usually in our paid ads. So I think we can, yeah, I think it's often on us to more, you know, come closer to them than other way around also.
Yeah, I feel that too. Exactly that.
So yeah, I think it's cool to find like a structure for it. I think we are trying to develop something similar. And I would also like to hear more about your kind of go-to-market model at Padel, because I think for us at GetAccept, we have almost been at all different kinds. We started out with sales-led, entered more of a marketing-led with a lot of inbounds, and then went into more product-led. So we are really all over the place. So I would like to hear, like, where are you in terms of, you know, go-to-market? Is it marketing, or, and how does like demand gen fit into that model?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same place. We have everything. I think the thing is, the pricing model, we don't charge up front. So it's kind of usage based. There's a base, it's a percentage of the transactions that comes through Padel. Mm. So any size company can use us. And therefore, we do have a mix of sales led, and we have product led as well, and marketing led, a lot of inbound as well. And there's value on all of them. I mean, a smaller seller or customer will tend to prefer the self-serve experience, while someone in a larger business will prefer the sales light one, because they probably have a buying committee involved. They need like all of this expertise to be very defined. And I think that in demand gen, at the moment, we should help with everyone. I think that's the mission. But most of a lot of my time and resources is usually going more towards the sales assisted side, because that's the one that's bringing most of the revenue for the business. But I think for the time being, everything that we do on demand gen is affecting self-serve and product-led and sales assisted. But I think as we scale, we might have to start thinking more about targeting specific audiences with our programs, but we're not there yet.
No, I think it's very interesting. I think we are at a very similar place to yours. We also have like a product-led motion where like people, you know, can use our product for free up until a certain amount. But where we see when we have like evaluated our, you know, highest value customers, they are usually coming in through more of the sales-led, more of the demos. So naturally, my focus is more on that part as well, as you're saying.
I think we need to give the option, because people prefer different things at different times. So having both, I think it's good.
Yeah, exactly. And if we can get people to, you know, try the product and eventually book a demo, that's also great, right? Because then we have some initial trust, I feel like.
Yeah, and it's much easier to sell because they already saw that and they're interested.
How would you say, because one of the things we are battling with usually is like, we want to show more of the product on the like the website. We want to be very transparent with what they're getting. We're not really there yet, but we're working on that. How is that for you? Is that something you're working on?
Yeah, so as I said, we rebranded in February, and the website before, seems like ages ago, but the website before, we didn't have any screenshots of the product. And I think a lot of people wanted to see the product. So there was no point of really stopping them from that, just gating that experience. Yeah. So we have changed, and now we have more pictures of the platform, how it looks like and so on. I think all of those pictures look great on the website because they're a little bit stylized. But I think moving forward, what we want to do is have more videos as well.
Yeah.
Explore that so people have more accessibility to the product. But we have evolved a lot and since January to now. And yeah, there's more coming on that end as well.
Yeah, I feel like it's often like we create these screenshots of a product that are, when we actually launch them on the website, they're not really of the product anymore. It's like they are so fixed almost. So they look like, they look really great, of course, but they are not really from the product anymore.
Yeah, I see that. You see your point. I think we did a good job at keeping it very similar to the product. So
that's good.
I think, yeah, the designers did very well there. It still looks great, but it looks very much what you're going to see once you open the platform.
Yeah, and I think that's key, especially when people try like a free account or something like that. I remember I had, in a previous company I worked for, we had a web client that didn't look so good. So we kind of, you know, enhanced it on the website. And then when they actually tried it, obviously they got a terrible experience because they were looking for something else that we showed. So it's like, I feel like we have to be very transparent in that sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And people talk these days. So if you're not transparent, they're not going to like that. They're going to be very vocal about it. So there's no point of really not being transparent. I think it's a positive for everyone.
Yeah. And if we just go a bit more into practice, we've been talking a lot about Padel and your team and so on. I would want to know a bit more, like, what are the most important parts in your Demandian team? How you work with it? You're like, do you have any specific frameworks you work after and so on? Just a bit more in depth.
Yeah. So my team is, we have a digital marketing manager and campaign managers, and soon a paid media person as well. We work with agencies as well, but the framework that, and they are all part of all of these framework that I'm going to talk about. So I kind of like put it on bullet points because I was trying to think how to talk about the framework without being confusing, because it's much easier when you show on a mirror board. But essentially, I think I'll start first with the first question is, how much do you want to generate demand? How much do you want to capture demand? That's the first thing that you need to get in a paper. Then you need to really define what share of your existing, how much money you're going to be spending on your existing channels and how much you're going to be testing on your channels, and which new channels are these that you're going to test. And I think it's always good to have something every quarter, because there might be something really interesting that you might find from these channels. And also don't give up on them after 3 months, because you might have not done it the right way. And then we'll start thinking about the campaign teams. And we usually go for like the bread and butter, the value prop. So what we're hearing from sales the most, what's that play that's winning the deals? That's usually like the one that we go for. But we also have, for example, a new product that we're launching. We create a campaign around that. Or we have a new segment that we think that we're doing very well because we just got this customer and they're doing great. And we create case studies about that and so on. So we'll target a segment. Mm. Once we have that figured out, what we do is on a mirror board, we start mapping out the buyer journey within that topic, from awareness and finding out that they have a problem, all the way to going to Padel and requesting a demo. That journey on Miro looks quite linear, but we all know it's not going to be linear. But what we're trying, the point of that exercise is really understanding what type of content do we need in that journey to make sure that they cross that journey very quickly, and that they understand very well the paddle, because the paddle value. So once we do that, what we start doing is we map all of the contents that we already have, all of the things that we can repurpose into maybe a new blog. A blog is a new blog, or a blog turns into a video or something like that. Plus, we find out all of the gaps in content that we need to produce, or what events do we need to be doing that quarter around, or I don't know how many months around that topic, to really help people to drive and cross their journey quicker.
So usually it's like it's a topic that kind of is above everything else you're doing in that sense.
And then once we have that figured out, what the content that we need, what type of events do we need to create, we start mapping all of those channels that I spoke about before into that campaign. So most of the channels are going to be in every campaign, for example, paid social. That's going to be on every campaign. But how are we going to use paid social in that? Depending, for example, if we're doing a video, a longer video, are we just creating a bunch of trailers of that video, or just recreating a series, all of that? So we start thinking of how to use and leverage those channels within those campaigns. And that's essentially how we build the campaigns for a quarter or something like that. But I think the other part of planning and framework that's very important is thinking about one-off programs that you can do during that quarter. They're very tactical. They have a huge value. And one, they bring some spikes, but also it's the chance of testing something new. And then new quarter, that becomes like a whole campaign or something like that. So that's usually how we think about campaigns here in Dimension.
And I like that you view, you know, yeah, obviously the buyer's journey is not static, right? They can go from any stage. But I still think it's valuable, as you say, to have, like, we create our content based on that. And then, of course, we don't care from what stage they enter in, but we cater for all of those different stages. I feel like that's an important part of that framework.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's less about defining where they are in the journey, but more about helping them wherever they are in the journey.
Yeah, exactly. And if you would take something that you feel have been like extra successful or just extra fun for you now in like 2022, what would you say?
So we have this thing, it's very new. It's like a month and a half, I think, that's been live, but it's with ads. It's a new program that we added with ads. So we switch everything that we do with paid social, for example. And it's what I'm calling storytelling ads. So essentially, we wanted to move away from just gated content. As you know, doesn't really represent intent. And we are not the easiest product to understand. So just gating and making it difficult for people to self-educate themselves doesn't make that much sense. So what we're currently doing is the ads, the body of the text of the copy of the ads are telling the full story. So we are promoting content, but the copy of the ad tells pretty much everything you need to know. For example, we highlight the problem, we highlight the scale of that problem, we explain the solution, why they need to fix this quickly, for example, and then we tie this to paddle. If someone do click the ad, great, they're going to go deep into that subject and learn more about it. But if they don't, and they just see that ad over and over on with different nuggets of information, they will eventually educate themselves about that. And the hypothesis is, if we give them all of this content for free and frictionless, because they don't even have to go to another page to read more, it's not clickbait, they eventually will learn, educate, and go to the website and request a demo and speak to sales or sign up to the product. And it's I love it. It's a bold move. I love it. It's been a month and a half, so I don't know if it's going to be great in 3 months. But it's a bold move because it's difficult to attribute. It's not lead gen type of program. But so far, what I've seen is we've doubled the amount of demos that are coming from accounts being targeted in this program. So it is showing some value. It's a small win so far. It's only been a month and a half, so I need to wait a little bit longer and see. But it's been super exciting. And again, we aligned really well with the social media person, and to make sure that we're in the same, we're learning from them, we're speaking the same voice and all of that. And Yeah, it's good. And just to clarify, it's not like we gave up on gated content. We still have gated content. There's some value in it, but it's not as much as we did before at all.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to stop you for a minute to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Riverside, one of the leading podcast and video recording platforms. I was actually using Riverside before they became a sponsor, so when they reached out, it was an easy decision. When I started this podcast, I was simply using Zoom to record my interviews, and from there, edit the audio as good as I could. But after trying their platform for the first time, I was blown away. It's as easy to use as Zoom, but I can record a much higher quality audio, and what's amazing is that it doesn't matter where my guest is located, it sounds like they're sitting with me in the same room. And after the recording, you can download separate audio tracks that upload separately on all guests' computers, which means the Wi-Fi issue is non-existent, and it's easy to edit all tracks. And today, Riverside is used by big names such as Gary Vee and companies like Spotify and the New York Times. So check them out. You'll find a link in the description. And now, back to the episode. And I like this storytelling, you know, baseline, because I feel like it's very easy in paid social ads to fall back on maybe, you know, click-through rate or clicks to your website as the, you know, main metric, which is, of course, nice. It's some sort of engagement, but it's also like if you can show that, if you can tell your story to a lot of people already in the feed, that's, you will reach so many more people, right? And that's,
exactly.
It's hard or almost impossible to measure, of course, but it's still like, yeah. We can feel strongly about it.
Yeah, I feel very strong about it. And I like what we're doing creatively as well. So we're making it quite interesting. So people would eventually stop and read about that. So yeah, so far it's good. But yeah, ask me in 6 months.
Yeah. And like as a last question today, do you have anything more like during this year you are looking forward to either try or like a new channel or... something like that?
I mean, we're just raised Series D, so there's a lot of excitement in the company. We also have a new joiner, a VP of DG, which is great. Her name's Emily. She's just joined. And it's great to have someone with so much experience, but she's coming with fresh eyes. She's coming with lots of ideas. And in the past few weeks, we've been brewing a lot of things for the next months and quarters. I'm gutted I can say that much because we don't have anything really set in stone. But I think something that we both agree that we need to do more and invest more is in online events to generate demand. There's a huge correlation to demos in the next month or opportunities and pipeline in the following quarters. So we should definitely be doing more there. And the idea is to be launching something soon. But I can't say that much because honestly, we're still thinking about it. And if I say something now, it might be completely different next week. But yeah, I think the other thing is this storytelling project. I think I'm so excited about it. I really want to see how it goes in the next chapters.
Good. So we're hopefully looking forward to see a lot of more online events from you in the next 6 months then. That would be fun.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of paddle.
Thank you so much for joining, Paula. It was great to have you.
No, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Demand Generation Movement, the podcast where you can learn everything about demand gen and how to make the shift towards revenue. Are you ready to step into the future and join the movement? Subscribe on demandgenerationmovement.com. This is your host, Adam Holmgren, signing off.